Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature an interview with Robert Rippey, who heads up the esports lab at UNLV's International Gaming Institute, to talk about how the casino industry can create positive business models with esports. The GGB podcast is brought to you by Global Payments Gaming Solutions, a division of Global Payments, which enables the world's gaming entertainment leaders to create amazing consumer experiences and maximize spend across all their physical and digital properties. To learn more, visit globalpaymentsgaming.com. In the last few years, the gaming industry has discovered that esports can deliver the younger demographic they desire to their casino facilities. As the first leader of the esports lab at UNLV, Robert Rippey has been testing theories and doing research into the esports player and enthusiast. A former casino executive, Rippey talks about the different ways that casinos have been using esports and what can be done in the future to refine the appeal of the activity to attract customers to casino resorts. Rippey will moderate a panel on esports at the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series on October 25th that will feature many experts in the field. To sign up for the episode in person or on the webinar, visit unlvghes.com. Rippey spoke with me at his office in the International Gaming Institute at UNLV last week. Robert Rippey, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. We were on a panel last week at the Casino Esports Conference, and I thought it went very well, and you really contributed a lot. So thanks for helping us on that, and also for helping us on the UNLV Gaming and Hospitality Education Series that's coming up in October. You're going to be moderating a panel there on esports, and I think it's got potential to be a really great panel.
Thank you, Roger. I enjoyed the conference last week. I enjoyed talking about this subject.
Yeah, of course.
Conferences are secondary to
right,
that.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating subject from both a practical and an academic perspective.
Right. A lot
of things to research and a lot of questions to be answered.
Right. I mean, it's barely, you've barely scratched the surface in terms of academic research on this subject. So you're in a real interesting position right here.
Exactly.
So let's talk about what you're doing at UNLV. It's really the first kind of esports thing, certainly, that the university has done. I think in academia overall, I think it's one of the original groundbreaking programs.
Well, thank you. I think it is quite groundbreaking. It's not only a first for UNLV, but I think it's a first among all major universities. You know, there are other universities that have developed various programming mm-hmm. and curricula around esports,
right.
but no one had approached it from the perspective of business.
Right.
How do you make money in mm-hmm. this business, and how does it, in our case,
right.
situated where we are, how does an integrated resort or a casino resort take advantage of this
sure.
growing phenomenon
right.
and incorporate it into their experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a destination like Las Vegas as well. I mean, if you can add that to your amenities and the things that people come to Las Vegas for, it just broadens your demographic reach.
I think it not only broadens it, it targets a very specific demographic mm-hmm. that they would love to reach,
sure.
which
yeah,
is
no
someone
question.
Under the age of 30.
Okay. So, you know, I get the impression that the casino industry is pretty confused about esports at this point. Certainly they understand it can bring that demographic, can bring these people, the younger people that they want to bring in, but they don't understand, frankly, how they're going to make money off of. So this is obviously, in your program, you're talking about business and how to make it profitable. How do you think the casinos should approach it at this point?
Well, I think the first step is to understand the perspective, preferences and desires of the people you're trying to attract mm-hmm. with esports.
Right.
So they're not all gamers. Some are people who like to watch mm-hmm. video games
right.
and like to watch high-level competitions. Just as there are football fans, basketball fans, there are esports fans
mm-hmm.
who enjoy just watching high-level competition. So the first step for, I think, the organization is to understand these people that you're trying to target. Instead of just immediately throwing video games or esports in front of them, you need to see the world through their eyes because
right.
they see entertainment in a very different perspective
right.
than my generation,
sure.
which I'm a baby boomer.
Yeah. Yeah, I recall about 6 or 7 years ago, I got invited to go to an esports tournament at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, and I'd never heard of this kind of thing before. And I went; I was really, frankly, blown away because there were you know thousands of young people there, you know, ranging in age, I guess, from 14 on up. The actual room where the tournament was held was packed with people. They had these big screens, and they're all just watching people play video games. And I thought, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. But here they all were. But of course, it's a different for our generation. Why do they? Is this kind of just their new form of sports? Really,
it's an interesting question. In a way, I would say yes. When you view sports as entertainment, mm-hmm. So it's an alternate form of entertainment that's more appealing to the generation that we're talking about, and there are many reasons behind that.
Right.
They enjoy playing video games and have been playing video-type games since they were children.
Right.
So they've grown up this way. Mm-hmm. My generation, we didn't do that.
Right.
We didn't grow up playing games on computers.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't even exist.
Right.
So here's a case where you have an entire generation that has grown up that way. It's a form of entertainment they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
They've always known. They've participated in. So when you go to an event like that, to see a room filled with people excited, young people excited about watching high-level players compete in an activity that they enjoy watching,
right.
It's much easier to understand in that context.
Right. Yeah, no question. One of the things we talked about at the panel last month was the different ways people consume entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about it looks like chaos to us because they're doing all kinds of different things. I guess they're multitasking to a large extent. And you said the casinos have to understand, you know, how they are doing this and that it could lead them to, you know, gambling at some point.
I agree. And that was the point I was trying to make last week is in the examples I was using, mm-hmm. like the large music festivals
right.
that come to Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
are a great example or a study of the behavior of these young people,
right.
what they like when mm-hmm. they're consuming entertainment. They like multifaceted entertainment coming at them all at one time.
Right.
You know, as opposed to sitting in a theater passively watching a performance,
mm-hmm.
they want to be engaged in the performance.
Right.
They want to be socializing with their friends during the performance. They want other elements, you know. This is why we use music festivals as a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's elements of music, of course. There's elements of socialization, costume, change, gaming, food,
mm-hmm.
beverage. All of these things are thrown together in what I kind of call chaotic.
Right.
Yet to that generation, who's, we call them multitaskers,
right.
are used to making sense out of experiences that are coming at many different directions
mm-hmm.
at one time.
Right. Now, we also talked about whether these people actually gamble or not.
Yeah.
And you had a couple of good stories. You could relate a couple of those about how you found out, yeah, they could be gamblers.
Well, first of all, we know one thing, that,
right.
and there's fairly good research that supports that many of them are risk-takers.
Right.
So risk-taking, by definition, is an
right.
essential ingredient
mm-hmm.
if you're going to gamble.
Sure.
So you like to take chances on things. So I told an anecdotal story at the panel about one of my students who I asked him just a straight question, do you gamble?
Mm-hmm.
He replied, no. I said, have you ever gambled? He replied, no. So then I asked him when he plays video games, do you ever play against your friends for a cheeseburger?
Yeah.
He says, all of the time.
Yeah.
Do you ever play for small stakes between the two of you?
Yeah.
You know, $20, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, we do that a lot.
Right.
So my response back to him was, well, you do gamble.
Right.
You realize that.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Just the form is different,
sure.
right? This is something you do in competition with
mm-hmm.
your friends that you enjoy. And what when I said that question to you, you were visualizing a casino.
Right.
But I wasn't asking you about casino gambling.
Sure, right, yeah.
I was asking you about the concept of
right.
it.
Right, right. So these people, you know, could be certainly convinced to gamble in a way they felt comfortable.
So I don't think convince is the right word. I think it's a natural part of what they like
okay.
to do when
mm-hmm.
they play games.
Right.
They take risks. They take chances. They get rewarded in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more about changing the vernacular so that it fits within the context of how they enjoy this type of game.
That's true. Well, you know, we've seen the skinned type of exchange, which is really a way of gambling for them as well.
Has been.
Right,
you
yeah,
know,
I know
but
that
it thing. Certainly shows they're willing to exchange
mm-hmm.
to get value.
Right.
They see value in these digital
mm-hmm.
artifacts.
Right.
So they do enjoy gambling, even if they don't think they do gamble.
that's probably a true statement.
Right, right. So let's talk about Vegas for a minute. I mean, Vegas, you know, we have this this esports arena downtown that Alex Eagleman and Millennial Sports built. We have a lounge at the Downtown Grand and a couple other casinos now, I understand.
Yes.
We have this beautiful esports arena at Luxor,
yes.
Which really went over the top with that. Las Vegas is becoming at least a center of gambling. Do you think it can be like the main focal point of the esports community at any point?
I think it's the logical place for mm-hmm. it to reside. You know, Las Vegas has kind of built its reputation around gambling and then evolved that reputation to be around the center of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you view esports and video gaming as a form of entertainment consistent with all of those other things, it makes logical sense that this should be the epicenter, certainly in the U.S.,
sure, right.
for this type of activity.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the facilities for it.
Yeah, no question. Let's talk about the sponsor for this episode. You know, there are a lot of payment processing companies in this industry, but Global Payment Gaming Solutions is really special. This company is a division of Global Payments, one of the largest payment processors in the world, and it enables the world's gaming entertainment leaders to create amazing customer service and maximize spend across all of their physical and digital properties. The company's complete suite of payment solutions enables safe, secure, and trusted cash access at the cage, on the casino floor, or online. And Global Payments analytics solutions enable clients to view performance across all of their gaming properties. So visit the company's website at globalpaymentgaming.com to learn more about its solutions for casino, debit, and credit cash advance, e-check, ATM, full-service TITO and payment kiosks, anti-money laundering compliance assistant, layered security, analytics, and much more. Now let's get back to our interview. But let's talk about individual casinos then, whether they're in Las Vegas or not. There's a lot of different ways, as we mentioned. There's a lounge at a couple of casinos here.
Yeah.
They've hosted some tournaments here. There's many ways that they've gotten involved in it. What do you think is a logical step by step progression for any casino, whether it be an Indian casino or a Las Vegas casino, to take to get involved in the esports business?
So, first of all, I think you have to become an expert in esports.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just convert an existing restaurant
right. yeah.
and call it an esports lounge, mm-hmm. throw some computers in there and
right.
wait for the cash to flow
sure.
in, because it's probably not going to.
Right.
You know, I spoke to a casino operator several months ago, and one of the key questions I had, because they were working on an idea
mm-hmm.
to integrate some sort of esports or video gaming into their experience. And the question I asked them, I said, on the team that's doing this for you, how many people are under the age of 30?
Yeah.
How many people are gamers?
Right.
They struggled to answer it.
Yeah.
So the struggle, from my perspective, was the first thing they needed to do.
Right, yeah.
They needed to bring the insight and a gamer mentality onto their team and get someone who can help them understand what this means
right.
and how you effectively create experiences that resonate you
right.
know, through their eyes.
Right. So this is the word that I've heard at many conferences, is that you need the authenticity.
Yes.
That the gamers will spot you a mile away if they know that you don't know what you're doing.
And the problem with that, the penalty you pay if
mm-hmm.
you get spotted as a fake
right.
is that you're done.
Right. Yeah.
You can't...
There's no going back.
There's no forgiveness.
Right, yeah.
You're not going to overcome that.
Yeah.
So the example I gave of converting a restaurant into a gaming
yeah.
lounge and throwing some computers
yeah.
and you know nothing about gaming or
right.
programming or play, it'll die
right.
and then you'll never come back
mm-hmm.
because you've tarnished your reputation
right.
when that element of authenticity is so critical to
yeah.
this market.
So you really do need somebody who knows that market and knows that generation and knows what they're looking for.
Absolutely.
I remember when Downtown Grand first opened their lounge, and they opened it in a part of the casino, like just off of the slot machines, and then they moved it. And I remember talking to the manager, and I said, "Well, why'd you move it?" He goes, "Well, it was disturbing the players." I said, "Oh, the slot players didn't like it." No, the video gamers didn't like hearing all the slot machines. It was distracting them, so they moved it to across the street to the other part, which isn't near the casino. It was actually a good idea because then they could allow 18-year-olds in there as well. So.
Right.
But that was an element of that authenticity, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think that's also part of the learning curve.
Right.
You know,
sure.
That was a good beta test for
right.
Downtown Grand, and
mm-hmm.
you know, Seth is extraordinary in that taking that risk of trying something like this. But it was good in the sense that it allowed them to learn.
Right.
And as they learn, they evolved.
Right.
So don't mix the video game players with the slot machines, because the slot machine jingles are distracting. Great, they are distracting. So right. just segregate the two.
Yeah.
They're not going to cross over.
No.
You know, the slot player is not going to go walk into the esports studio
right.
and plop down in front of an Alienware computer and try to play League of Legends.
Right. Yeah.
That's never going to happen.
Sure.
And, you know, it's unlikely that the League of Legends player is going to take time out from their 2.5 hour game
right.
to get up and go sit in front of a slot machine right. for 20 minutes.
Yeah. It's almost like Racino's in the past, where you're not going to get the horse player to play slots and vice versa.
It's a great example.
Yeah. So, again, that authenticity is really important. Well, one of the guys we have on our panel at the end of October is Rahoud Saoul, who's head of a company called Unicorn, which actually programs betting on esports, and they've done a great job. I know they're based. They have a lot of business in Australia, and they're based here in Las Vegas, though. But how do you think that's going to evolve, the betting on esports in casinos?
So I know Rahoul is a great guy and
right.
a great company,
mm-hmm.
and I think they really are at the forefront in trying to understand that.
Right.
So they are doing different things that allow you to, you know, to work on their platform and to try, and in some jurisdictions actually wager. None
right.
of those are here
mm-hmm.
in the U.S. But I think they're at the forefront of trying to answer that question.
Okay.
And it's a good question.
Right.
How are you going to, or what is the most desirable way to gamble
yeah.
as it relates to esports?
Mm-hmm.
And if you view it as both a participation activity and as a spectator sport, maybe those are two different type of questions.
Right.
But he's a great panelist to have, because he has great insight over what they've learned in
yeah.
these last 2 or 3 years.
Sure, absolutely. Well, this, of course, brings up the regulatory problem, and right, not necessarily a problem, but an issue. You have to make the regulators comfortable with when you bring a new betting option there. What are some of the regulatory challenges for esports?
Well, I think most significant is it's a new type of game,
mm-hmm.
right? This is not the traditional game that regulators have experienced for decades, right?
Right.
A new type of slot machine, which has a very standard approach to regulation and approval.
Right.
It's not a new type of, you know, sports betting, et cetera. It's an entirely new genre in itself.
Right.
So I think the first step is continuing the education and understanding of what this is. And then one of the other elements that the regulators have all raised is, you know, they're concerned primarily about fairness, right?
Sure.
Fair game to play,
right.
fair for players,
mm-hmm.
no cheating, etc. And it's understanding that when you have an environment like esports, we have hundreds of players.
Right.
I don't mean physical players,
right.
but hundreds of parties
mm-hmm.
from the publishers of the games
right.
to the creators of the technology
mm-hmm.
that enables those games. How do you ensure that fairness standard exists in this kind of very diverse ecosystem when there aren't just companies that
sure.
make machines
right,
that
right.
you gamble on? There are lots of different companies.
Yeah.
And in games that are emerging onto the field with professional levels of play
mm-hmm.
that are, you know, not regulated relative to each other. An example you can think of is like the NFL. So the NFL regulates professional football. Everybody understands that. Everybody accepts that they do a good job of it
right.
and have been doing it for decades.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one entity like that for
sure.
esports.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there are emerging like the Esports Integrity Coalition,
mm-hmm.
which is working towards ensuring there's integrity around the games and the play and the tournaments.
Right.
But there's still a way away from that. So I think regulators are looking at this kind of evolving
mm-hmm.
environment and
right.
saying, how do we best support it, and how do we best ensure that fairness happens in there?
Right, right. Are there ways to really catch cheating? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, if you want to be eaten by a monster, you know,
uh-huh.
in one of these games, you could do it and nobody could ever tell. But are there ways, is there data that could really point that out, that something unusual just happened?
So, theoretically,
mm-hmm.
you can see everything.
Yeah.
It's digital.
Right.
Everything is recorded. Everything is a keystroke. Everything
mm-hmm.
is a mouse move.
Right.
Every action that player takes is a digital action. It's not
mm-hmm.
a physical action,
right.
you know, like a football.
Sure, right.
In a football game. So, theoretically, you have a track record of every single thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You could use machine learning or deep learning or AI to analyze play.
Right.
And look for suspicious patterns. Right? Because you have all of this data.
Sure, right.
So I think that's probably the answer, mm-hmm. is that use the data that would be available to you, because this is an entirely computer-based paradigm, and then use that data to look for patterns. And patterns would represent improper play,
sure,
or,
right.
you know, cheating. Or
right,
whatever.
Right. Okay. So one of the things we didn't touch on yet was what Caesars is doing with esports. They built a studio behind Bally's behind their casino there. So it's not really inside the casino. It's actually across the parking lot, a pretty fair way from the casino. But they held a tournament there last spring, and I went, and it was very, very impressive. A lot of people in there, and as we mentioned, it looked very chaotic. But the kids were enjoying themselves. They were, you know, they had, it was all televised. They had, you know, banks of TV cameras. They had a stage where, you know, two teams were playing each other, and it was really quite exciting. Not understandable for somebody like me, but they all seemed to be enjoying themselves. So is this something that, and then I think they're going to use that studio as well for a league of esports, where they're going to film this every week, I guess. Is that something that's a viable option for casinos? Obviously a larger casino company in this case.
Yeah, I think that the scale of that is, mm-hmm. is one question, right?
Right?
So that's beyond the capacity of a lot of casino companies, because they physically don't have the space
right.
to do something mm-hmm. like that. Also, Caesars is just opening a smaller scale facility at the Rio
right.
called the
mm-hmm.
Mall.
Yep.
So they're at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the big plot.
Right.
Here's the big space, and here's the, you know, more kind of lounge type space.
Right.
So I think those are great efforts in that they allow them to learn that there are elements of both of
mm-hmm.
those that will ultimately define what is their esports strategy or,
right, right.
or overall plan looks like.
Right. And it seems to be spreading throughout the industry, this getting involved in esports. I know the Ocean Casino in Atlantic City is going to have an esports lounge eventually sometime this winter. I believe that it's going to open. And I've talked to a couple of tribal casinos they're very interested in it, too. So do you think this is going to be a real trend in the industry?
Oh, man. It's already a big trend. I speak at a number of conferences. I spoke to the Canadian Gaming Summit last
mm-hmm.
year, last summer. It was a year
yeah.
ago. And I was inundated with questions by operators.
Right.
How do we do this? Who should we work with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these kind of things. So I think it's already taken hold. I
yeah.
think a number of them, they're not looking to convert their slot floors into esports.
Right,
space. That
right.
wouldn't make any sense. But they are trying to say, what can we learn? What can we? How can we test? And how can we begin to incorporate some of this and maybe begin to attract that audience that
mm-hmm.
maybe we're not getting as much of as we'd like?
Right, right. And I think, again, as you mentioned, understanding, going through some of these beta testing. I remember going to the esports lounge at Luxor, the arena that they opened there,
mm-hmm.
and looking at the menu that they were offering. And
yeah.
It didn't seem like sushi and some real fancy thing. It didn't seem like a menu that would appeal to these people who are just sitting in front of the screen. But who knows? I don't know.
So I can tell you this. The first
yeah.
criteria, if you're a gamer and someone is going to sell you food,
right.
it has to be food that isn't messy.
Yeah, right.
It has to be food you can eat. One of the reasons that
sure.
Asian food has been popular at gamers because you can eat with chopsticks.
Right.
If you eat with chopsticks, you're not going to get anything on your fingers,
right.
which means you're not going to get anything on those controls.
Right.
So all of these are details related
yeah, that's
to
right.
one
yeah,
each other.
Exactly.
So.
You need to know that kind of
yeah.
stuff. Yeah. That's funny. So let's talk about you know what you think this can be at UNLV. You know, as you mentioned, there are a lot of schools that have started putting together esports programs and things
yeah.
like that. I know you know there's a couple of colleges that have some sort of degree in esports, if I'm not mistaken. Is that true?
I'm not aware of a
some
degree.
Courses. Okay.
I think you can have an area of concentration
yeah, okay.
at certain
okay,
schools
great.
That will help you towards a traditional type
right,
degree.
Right.
Yeah.
So what are the plans here? Do you think there can be a degree course in it? I mean, even if it's just a business type
yeah,
of concentration?
I don't see it. Even in the long run, I don't foresee a degree. I see a concentration in
okay.
it. You
mm-hmm.
know, so many people, and I hear this from a lot of parents.
Yeah.
Like, my children love to play video games. They
right.
play too much. I want them to go to college. Is there a path that those two things intersect?
Right.
And that's where I think what I'm trying mm-hmm. to do here and what we're trying to do at the Gaming
sure.
Institute and eventually would provide is that you could come here and get a hospitality degree
mm-hmm.
with a focus in esports tournament management
right.
or esports business management.
Sure.
It's still a hospitality degree,
right.
which means it's a little more diverse than that,
mm-hmm.
but you have a concentration in this particular area
right.
which better equips you to go out and be a great employee of one of these gaming companies who's looking for that.
Sure.
So we'd love to get someone with a great hospitality degree, but with some kind of background in esports business.
Sure.
Oh, that's you. So that's different than what most people think. You know, like, I'm playing esports, I get really good, I want to become a professional player.
Right.
Well, not everybody can become a professional football player
either. Exactly, right.
It's a very, very small percentage can. But what about the others? Is there an opportunity for them to take something they love, playing video games at this level, and turn it into a hospitality career?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think our education would go, and that's where I'd like to see our program headed.
Great. I was talking to somebody about the professional esports players, and basically they're anywhere between 15 and 22, and then, you know, by the time you're 25, your reflexes are starting to slow down, and you can't keep up even at 25. It's a pretty narrow field and a pretty short lifespan.
It is now.
Yeah.
I think we see that. We have a limited number of years that's based upon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of course, maybe that will change.
Sure.
You know, but certainly appears to be that they're peak period as a player is in their early 20s.
How about designing the actual games themselves? Is that something that UNLV is going to get involved in?
I can't see that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a discipline that, you know, game development. I mean, we do some here, but that's not a core competency, I think. Certainly on the gaming institute.
Sure.
We don't do that. We do social games and traditional casino game innovation here, but e-sport in particular, I mean, you look at a game franchise, one of the popular game franchises, those games, you know, are developed at $20, $30, $40 million investment in to develop that franchise the way it is.
Right.
That's pretty significant. Yeah, that's hard to compete against.
Great. Well, Robert, it's going to be a great session on October 25th here at the UNLV's International Gaming Institute. Anybody who wants to sign up for it, you go to unlvghes.com and you'll see the sign-up sheet there. And it also is webcast. If you're not in Vegas, you can watch it on the web. So thanks for helping us out with that. We appreciate it, and we're looking forward to seeing the panel actually come to fruition.
My pleasure, Robert. Look forward to seeing you.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of the GGB Podcast, brought to you by Global Payments Gaming Solutions. To learn more about the services provided by this company, visit globalpaymentsgaming.com. To read more about esports and its place in the casino industry, visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on all the news of the gaming industry, visit ggbnews.com. And to find the best bonuses and promotions for iGaming sites and how to attract more players to your legal iGaming casino, visit igamingplayer.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz and on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. That's it for today. Hope to see you next week for the GGB Podcast.